Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Our region is home to numerous science organizations, many conducting research around the globe. In addition to international work, some are engaged in projects locally. It might be research-based, consulting, or helping local organizations, municipalities, or residents translate research findings into best practices. Today, we discuss the benefits of having world-class science research organizations in our backyard. Later in the hour, we talk with individual scientists who are giving back to their communities by volunteering their time and expertise on local town boards. But first, we discuss the ways the organizations themselves engage in our communities. Joining us, Dr. Heather Goldstone, Chief Communications Officer at Woodwell Climate Research Center and former science journalist and host here at CAI. Good to see you, Heather. Welcome back.
Nice to be back in a different chair.
Yeah. Dr. Laura Brothers, a marine geologist at the U.S. Geological Survey's Woods Hole Coastal and Marine Science Center. Hi, Laura.
Hi, great to be here.
And Dr. Matthew Charette, Senior Scientist in Marine Chemistry and Geochemistry at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and Director of HUI Sea Grant. Hi,
Matt. Good morning, Mindy. Good to be here.
Yeah. So, Heather, Woodwell Climate Research Center was started here in Falmouth by George Woodwell, but is engaged in projects all over the world. For those who are not familiar with the organization, what is the focus of the work?
Yeah, so our mission at Woodwell Climate Research Center is science for solutions at the nexus of climate, people, and nature. When we think about climate change, often in the public discourse, that gets framed as a technology issue, and natural systems and our societies kind of get left out of that, right? We think about energy systems and economic systems, and those are critically important. But in fact, natural systems, deforestation, the destruction and degradation of ecosystems accounts for about a quarter of global emissions. And actually, if we flip that to the solutions lens, which is where we really focus our research and our efforts, they have the potential to be even larger solutions. So as you said and mentioned in your intro, we're really known for working on a global scale, scientists on the ground from Alaska to the Amazon, working with policy leaders around the world at every level. And that also includes being right here in our backyard, because, of course, the Cape and Islands both faces climate risks. And that's an area of expertise for us and has incredible natural resources to bring to bear that can be part of shaping a better climate future.
Yeah. Laura, USGS is a federal agency with centers all over the country. Tell us about the work that's happening here in Woods Hole.
Right. Well, here in Woods Hole, we have several projects that we conduct with the state and local town agencies, in particular with the state of Massachusetts. We've been mapping the waterways, so Vineyard Sound, seafloor mapping, seeing what's on the seafloor, what's below the seafloor. And we've been doing that all over the state's waters. In addition, we're always looking at shoreline change, looking at where things are going to change and how they will in the future and making those predictions so that local town managers can make better informed decisions.
Yeah. Matt, what's the mission of the Sea Grant program and what's the connection between HUI and Sea Grant?
Right. So, HUI Sea Grant is one of 34 Sea Grant programs around the country. We're a federal university partnership program funded by NOAA, and we focus on coastal research, outreach, and education. And I think one of the things that makes our research program unique compared to other research agencies like the National Science Foundation is that our research topics are determined by community members. They tell us what is important, what issues need to be addressed in our area. And also that we have experts on staff that take that research and translate it for use by members of the community.
Yeah. Each of your organizations and institutions do work globally, but as we're saying, also engaged in projects in our region. Heather, let's start with Woodwell. What's some of the work that you're doing that is focused or impacts the Cape Coast and Islands?
Yeah, there's actually, I think, a surprising amount of it. It covers and this is typical for Woodwell, our dozen and a half lead scientists cover a lot of territory, both physically and conceptually. So we've got a project just starting up with the town of Barnstable to assess climate risk. This is something we've been doing with communities around the country and around the world. This is an example of doing that locally. We've also got a project That's been expanding over the past couple of years on Martha's Vineyard, where we're not only looking at risk, we're also, as I mentioned before, bringing that natural resources, natural climate solutions piece to it to think about land use on Martha's Vineyard and how that fits into climate planning, comprehensive climate planning that the Martha's Vineyard Commission has been doing. And then we've got a lot of really longstanding work here that a lot of it is in collaboration with other partners. So I'll mention one since you, Laura, just mentioned USGS's work on water. Cape Cod Rivers Observatory is one of a number of projects we have around the globe monitoring water quality in rivers and how that's shifting. And as climate change impacts precipitation patterns, what we're seeing is that flow in rivers is changing a lot. And that's one of the big impacts. And so we've actually been collaborating with USGS to put flow meters in the rivers where we've been monitoring nutrients for a long time to also be monitoring flow and see how those different things are interacting as climate changes our rivers. We've got a lot of ecological restoration work that's been going on. So folks are probably familiar with the Coonamesset River restoration, and scientists from Woodwell were very much involved in the designing of that and monitoring the impacts, the positive benefits, I should, you know, when I say impacts, of that restoration, still very much involved there. And we're in herring monitoring season now, right? So getting out there on the Coonamesset River and actually being able to count the herring. So there's a real diversity of work. Oh, and I should also mention, and again, collaboration, a key part working with Buzzards Bay Coalition on the Bay Watchers program, monitoring Buzzards Bay water quality and impacts of temperature rise.
As you were talking, I'm going, collaboration.
So much collaboration. Yeah, it's really critical. Yeah.
Laura, you talked about mapping of the seafloor. Talk about why that's important and how that information can be used by local municipalities and even fishermen.
Yeah, sure. So there's so much of our seafloor that we don't really know what's there. And I mean, fishermen have the best idea of it going in. But by using new technologies, we can see how deep everything is, where there's a large boulder, where there's not, where there's maybe sandy seafloor that certain type of fish like, or more gravelly, rocky seafloor where other types of creatures like. And knowing what's underneath the seafloor is really important if you're going to move the seafloor around, put anything on the seafloor, like a cable, maybe like a wind turbine if you're further offshore. And so all of this information that we gather, we make it all public. We try to put it in formats where everybody could just put it into their fish finder. And then you could see, oh, here's the gravelly patch over here. Or we know over here, say if you're more in the development side or a state or management side of, oh, it might be hard to have the cable come along here because we know there are boulders and large rocks, and or that's a really important habitat, so we should probably move it somewhere else. So those are just some of the applications.
We see the impacts of climate change along the shoreline, but are there changes happening to the seafloor surrounding the Cape and Islands that you're looking at?
Sure. And so another thing that we can do is sometimes go back to map again to see how something has changed. And so in places that are undergoing, say off a sandwich or so that is having a lot of erosion right by the jetties at the canal, we can go and map and see how much sediment, how much sand is there, and how, and if that's not there, what's happening to it. And so really we try to put our context, our work, our mapping work in context of other studies that say, look at how the ocean is moving, look at how it's moving the sediment. So then we can better say, all right, this place might be really vulnerable right here, whereas this location downstream, maybe it's in a better spot.
Yeah, and how quickly it's happening, right?
Yeah.
Matt, the WHOE-C grant helps local municipalities, organizations, and even business make research-driven decisions. Tell us more about the extension agents and some of the expertise that they provide.
Yeah, so we do quite a lot of work with the shellfish aquaculture industry. It turns out that in Massachusetts, we're tied with Washington State as the number one producer of shellfish in the country. In fact, I was down in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and there were Wellfleet oysters and Barnstable oysters on the menu in the restaurant. So it's a really important part of our economy. And so we have extension agents, as they're called, on staff, modeled after the land grant program, where shellfish farmers can reach out to us and ask us for advice if they're having some difficulties on their farm. they can reach out and get some expert opinions based on, for example, some of the research that we fund, what might be going on and how they can fix it.
Yeah. So do you find that? That's exactly what I was thinking. You've got this expertise and shellfishing is, you know, big business now, right? So do you have a lot of shellfish farmers taking advantage of using that data?
Absolutely. Yeah. They've got us on speed dial. We have water quality sensors in key shellfish growing areas around the state. They actually go onto the website and use that data to determine when they should put their shellfish in the water in the spring, when they should take it out in the fall. And they take advantage of the research we fund. I'll just give you one quick example. We're funding a project where a couple of Hui scientists are looking at biofouling on oysters, specifically barnacles. And they're finding that there's different species of barnacles, whether you're growing in Barnstable off of Cape Cod Bay or down here in Falmouth and Buzzards Bay. Also that water temperature plays a role in that. And so that's information that then we can take and feed back to the farmers when they call us
up. Of course, salinity, we get to taste that in the oysters.
Yes.
Heather, I imagine it's the same thing. You've got the top climate scientists in the world here at Woodwell. And I imagine there's lots of people who want to tap into that expertise. So how do you determine what local projects you're going to be part of?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'd say it's part and parcel of how we decide which projects we're going to take on overall. And we really try to be strategic because we are not the world's largest organization. We cannot be in every place in the world. So one thing that we really look at in considering projects is what's the potential for this one project not only to have local impacts, but to potentially be a model or something that could be replicable in other places and could inform work more broadly. And so we're constantly looking at, okay, what are the, what are the opportunities to take what we might learn from this project and share it with others, share it with policymakers, turn it into that broader model. And I think, we're seeing this actually on kind of a local scale right now with our Martha's Vineyard work, like I said, that brings together both our expertise in assessing climate risk, which we like to think about risk information as a transformative kind of step. You have to understand the risk that you face in order to get into a resilience mindset. And that's really where we want to be, not just focused on, oh my gosh, these are all the problems we're facing, but you have to understand that to go, okay, so how do we plan for where we want to be, right? Yeah. So having that expertise and then having the nature-based climate solutions, understanding the importance of forests and ecosystems as carbon sinks and air conditioners for the planet, and then putting that together and saying, okay, so we can bring all this together and actually, have those two inform each other. We've now done that on a larger scale, or we are doing that on a much larger scale, actually, with the country of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where we're working with their Ministry of Environment to bring together both risk and understanding of natural resources, right? So those individual projects become models that can become expanded. And we've actually then had conversations about, okay, could we expand that, on the local level to the entire Cape once we've done it with the vineyard? Or and there's definitely interest there. So I think that's one thing that really comes into play. And then, some of it really just has to do with individual scientist connections, because, of course, we are all at this table and at all of our organizations, members of this community with a really vested interest in seeing our communities succeed. And so some of that comes back to where that passion and those connections are.
Yeah. Talk a little bit, Heather, about education and community engagement and, what staff and scientists, how they engage with maybe local schools and educational organizations.
Yeah, well, you already mentioned collaboration, and I think this is one of the most fertile areas of collaboration across all of the scientific organizations, right? We're engaged in the partnership with Falmouth Public Schools. All of the science organizations are signatories to this partnership that's really aimed at leveling up the connection between our science organizations and our local public schools, where for a long time that's been pretty organic, right? Where a scientist knows a teacher or has a kid in the class or has a particular project they want to do. And instead saying, no, we are in a world-class science community. We should have world-class science education for every single student in the district and really making it equitable and built into the system. And that's been really exciting to see. And then education also, I think we can't forget at the the undergrad and graduate level, right? There's a ton of that. And again, the science institutions all really working together on programs like the Partnership Education Program that brings a really diverse cohort of historically excluded students into Woods Hole for research experiences every summer. So there's a lot there. And I think that collaboration between the six organizations is so important because there's a lot that any one of our organizations or programs, being smaller, wouldn't be able to do on their own, that we're able to have this real critical mass in the education space.
Yeah, going back to the school, that's what anybody who visits the science fair, holy cow. what these kids come up with is just mind-blowing, right?
We just had three Falmouth Public School, Falmouth High School students at the state science fair,
yeah,
right?
So, amazing, yeah. I know. So, Laura, USGS has also worked with local organizations, including the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, right, on educational programs. Tell us about that.
Yes, so we're lucky enough to be one of the founding scientific participants in the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe's summer youth camp. They're preserving our homelands camp. And so that's kind of combining Western science and then teaming up with elders in and instructing the students just in these different methods of looking at the world. And we learn so much from the students, more than they learn from us in many instances. And it's a real pleasure. It's been going on for 12 years. And so now it includes many of the science institutions here and further around the Cape as well. And so that has been wonderful.
Yeah. Matt, education is intrinsic, right, to most of the Sea Grant programs. Specifically, how are you working with local schools or educational organizations?
Right. So we have an education specialist who goes into the classroom, not only here in the Falmouth School District, but school districts throughout the Cape and southeastern Massachusetts. She also holds teacher workshops a couple of times a year where teachers can come in, learn the latest and greatest research from HUI scientists, get a classroom demonstration project that they can then take back with them. And that kind of thing has a huge multiplier effect, right? We bring in 30 teachers and they each have whatever, 100 students that they then take that knowledge back to for sharing. So.
Yeah. I think too, when you talk to scientists and you say, how did you get interested in whatever science? Almost always, they were interested at a young age, right? Elementary school. And I was saying before we went on the air, my grandson, who's in third grade, is in this after-school program where it's scientists from all the different science organizations coming in and, you know, telling these kids about the science that they're working on. And it's so, and especially I think for little girls, to have that kind of opportunity to, you know, have their, you know, inspiration acknowledged and like, yeah, you can do this. And they, you know, see. Yeah, go ahead.
And when we hear from parents that they came home that day and told them about what they learned, we know that we're having impact. And we're also using those students as a multiplier effect, right, for these important environmental literacy issues.
Yeah. Science has become politicized over the last 5 to 10 years. That polarization can be heightened in the media with headlines or sound bites. When you're working in communities locally and nationally, is that evident in how your research expertise in science is received, Heather?
Well, especially when you're working in the climate space, this is exaggerated, right? But I would say at Woodwell, our experience is maybe different than you might expect. We actually are very engaged with policymakers, with government officials and elected officials at all levels, like I said, from working with individual municipalities to understand their risk profiles up to the federal level and the UN level to inform policy. And I think what we're finding is increasingly there is interest in having these conversations across the aisle. Right. We were just part at the end of last year of helping to shape legislation that was then filed that was bipartisan, bicameral legislation, a bill that was filed to support natural climate solutions research and implementation across the country. So, you know, there is that polarization, but I think it's also possible as a science organization to come in really grounded in the facts. And at this point, the facts that we can bring to bear really match up with people's daily experiences of extreme weather and escalating risks. It's hard to really deny that. And so I think some of that is actually falling away, and we're finding a lot of fruitful conversations.
Yeah. Laura?
No, I agree with everything Heather says. I mean, these impacts, they're happening to everyone. You can't deny it. The coastline is changing. You're getting breaches. It is when your house is flooding. Nobody likes that. And we're a non-regulatory agency as the USGS. We are strictly a science agency doing the science for policy. And we all need to know more because we're all living here and things are changing fast.
Yeah. We talked about collaboration earlier, and I was thinking you mentioned nobody knows the water better than fishermen. And there's, for years, that conflict, right, between fishermen and scientists. But it seems that there's a lot more collaboration happening between those groups now,
sure.
Right?
It's really important to get you want local expertise. You want to know who knows the things best. And so working with the different stakeholders who know whether it's the seafloor bottom, whether it's the coastline, whether it's the marshes, you want to talk to the people who know and work with that. And so I think that's something that a lot of the federal agencies are really trying to get more on board with. And we certainly at our office.
Matt?
Yeah, climate change is a super important cross-cutting theme in our strategic plan. And the way that we try to educate people or convince them that this is important, regardless of what their political persuasion is by focusing on sort of the economic impacts as well as the economic benefits of the research that we're funding and the activities that we're undertaking.
You know, Heather mentioned coastal resilience. So, Matt, I'm going to give you opportunity to talk about Coastal Resilience Week quickly.
Yes, coming up in June. I don't have the dates.
8th through the 15th,
thanks,
I think.
Thanks, Mindy. 8th through the 15th. Yes, funded by a boost in funding that we received. Cape Cod Coastal Resilience Week will be kicking off June 8th. A number of activities focused on coastal resilience, a huge issue here on the Cape and Islands with all of the flooding and erosion. You can just look at the recent storm we had a couple of weeks ago. We're losing, years worth of dune in some places in a single storm.
Yeah, we'll have lots more information about details on that coming up. They're still being worked out, right?
Indeed.
Anything else anybody want to add?
I just want to tap into what Laura just mentioned in terms of bringing different ways of knowing and folks from different backgrounds, not only to the table to talk about the results of research, but actually into the research process. And I think that's something that all of our organizations have been doing for a long time and are doing it increasingly and is so important in ensuring that the results of the science are right, that they're relevant, and that they're actually put into use. And it's been a really encouraging trend to see that spreading.
Yeah. Dr. Heather Goldstone, Chief Communications Officer at Woodwell Climate Research Center and former science journalist and host here at CAI. Dr. Laura Brothers, marine geologist at the U.S. Geological Survey's Woods Hole Coastal and Marine Science Center. And Dr. Matthew Charette, Senior Scientist in Marine Chemistry and Geochemistry at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and Director of HUI's Sea Grant. Thanks for being here, all of you, and for sharing what you do. I'm sure it was very helpful for folks to know. Thank you. Coming up, we discuss the benefits of having world-class science research organizations in our backyard. After a break, we talk with individual scientists who are giving back to their communities by volunteering their time and expertise on local town boards. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing the benefits of having world-class science research and environmental consulting firms based in our region. Joining us are three scientists who put their degrees and knowledge to work even after hours by volunteering on town boards. With us is Casey Chatelain, environmental scientist with the Horsley-Witten Group, currently serving on the Town of Brewster's Conservation Commission and previously on the town's Board of Health. Hi, Casey.
Hi.
Calliope Shute, environmental specialist in the Water Quality and Hazardous Materials Program at the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension and serving on the Provincetown Board of Health. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Abigail Archer, fisheries and aquaculture specialist at HUI Sea Grant Program and member of the Brewster Board of Health. Welcome.
Good morning.
All right, Abigail, what's your professional background and what got you interested in serving on a town board?
So I'm a marine scientist. I have a Master's of Science in Wildlife and Fisheries Conservation from University of Massachusetts Amherst, and I studied fish passage, and I've got a policy background, so I did a policy fellowship in Washington, D.C. before I went into the workforce, worked in river restoration, and so now I work for both HUI Sea Grant and then also Barnstable County, Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. My parents volunteered when I was a kid, and so I got to see them modeling volunteerism. And I was also really lucky that the process was demystified for me. And I knew what happened at town meeting because when my brother and I were too little to be left at home, my mom would take us to town meeting with her. So Cynthia Franklin, I grew up in Braintree, and she was the representative town meeting volunteer. And so I'd sit in the back with my book, and I remember being very grumpy and very bored, but it sunk in, and I got to see the process, and it definitely had an impact on me. So just volunteering for a town is part of something
and
my family does.
That can have more drama than sitting home watching TV.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So you knew a little bit about workings of town boards and specifically Board of Health. Did you know much about that before you did that?
I didn't, actually. So as soon as I was old enough to start volunteering, when I lived in Wellfleet, I was on the Conservation Commission. And then when I moved to Brewster, I was on the Brewster Coastal Committee. And then partly through the influence of my peers who are here today, I got encouraged to run for Board of Health. Calliope and I have known each other for a while, and so I knew she had served on Board of Health, Boards of Health in other towns she had lived in. So again, volunteering got modeled for me, but I have to do a lot of reading to catch up with what information is needed, what science is out there in order to apply the regulations from the Board of Health.
Yeah. All right, Casey, tell us more about your professional background and work.
Yeah, I got a degree in environmental studies and a master's of oceanography. And for the past couple of years now, I've been working at Horsley-Witten Group. A lot of my work is related to environmental permitting of ecological restoration projects, dam removal projects. And so it puts me in a great position to serve on the Conservation Commission because I've got a copy of the Wetlands Protection Act at my desk. You know, that's well-loved, dog-eared, highlighted, notated.
Almost memorized.
I wouldn't go that far if anyone can memorize that thing. But it just puts me in a good position, I think, to serve on the Conservation Commission. And I'm a firm believer in getting involved in your community. In some cases, for some people, that's simply making a sick neighbor dinner. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's volunteering for a nonprofit. But in my case, I choose to serve my community by sitting on a town board.
Yeah. So what was it that piqued your interest in serving on a town board?
There are people, I think, we have discussions with folks and they just sort of complain to the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer, instead of just complaining to the universe,
take
a part
it.
Of the process, right? Like, I am not single-handedly changing the Wetland Protection Act and the state regulations, but I can have an impact on, the way that it's enforced in the town of Brewster and working with property owners.
All right. Calliope, tell us more about your professional background and work.
Yeah, mine is pretty varied. I have been working in water quality and hazardous waste for 20 years. And before that, I was an educator and worked in complementary medicine with my parents. I spent a lot of time working in our family business. My parents had a health food store in the 70s and 80s, and both my parents are acupuncturists and herbalists, and I worked with and for them. And then I got into hazardous waste and water quality. I'm not exactly sure how, but I have a master's from Johns Hopkins, and I got my BA from Lesley University in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of...
All right. So what piqued your interest in serving on the Provincetown Board of Health?
Well, I had served on the Mashpee Board of Health previous to moving to Provincetown in 2017, and I really appreciated being able to make a difference that aligned with my principles of clean air and clean water for people in a way that made a lot of sense to me, a little bit like what Casey's talking about, like taking action. And my dad has a motto called less talk, more action. And they live that. And a lot like Abigail, we saw that kind of work normalized. And I tried to normalize it for my daughter. My daughter's like Abigail. I brought her to Mashpee Board of Health meetings when she was quite little. She'd sit under the desk reading. And so I tried to, show her that behavior as well, taking her to town meeting. And she would complain about how boring it was. And I would say, do you know how boring a totalitarian dictatorship is? You have to participate. So, yeah, I think it's a process.
Yeah. Now, were you elected or appointed?
Both positions were appointed, Mashpee Board of Health and Provincetown Board of Health, and also the Affordable Housing Trust that I served on in Mashpee as well, that was appointed.
Talk about a little bit about your role or work on the Board of Health in Provincetown. What are you looking at?
So the Board of Health has a wide range of purview, and it's a regulatory board, and so you have to be really mindful of looking at issues from a lot of different perspectives. Provincetown is non-conforming in a lot of different ways. But one of the ways is, the town is built on a beach and it's old. And that poses a lot of issues with septic systems, with bedrooms, with sanitary facilities. It's complicated. And like Abigail said, you have to be able to check in with people who know more about issues than you do and spend the time to do the research. And I know Rolodexes are kind of old-fashioned, but I exhausted mine when I first started.
Abigail, same question. What's the work of the Board of Health in Brewster, and were you elected or appointed?
So having first served on a conservation commission where you have the Wetlands Protection Act, and that is the main set of regulations that you're working with, I was floored when I joined Board of Health and realized there are over 20 regulations that we're responsible for. So I am constantly reading. So I was an elected position. It was the first time I'd ever engaged in an election or, you know, running for a position. And yeah, I'm still getting up to speed. We are really lucky in Massachusetts that there is so much training available. So I'd say for anybody who's considering volunteering, there are so many training resources out there. So Boston University has a whole set of classes for volunteer Board of Health members. But it's pretty wide ranging. So it's, you know, protection and promotion of public health, control of disease, protection of the environment, and promotion of sanitary living conditions. We work on septic system issues quite a bit. And I'm really struck at Board of Health that it's this mix of proactive and reactive. So you are dealing in the moment with, you know, an issue with a septic system or a sanitary living condition. You're trying to solve that problem in a kind and understanding way with the community resources. But then you're also trying to look 10, 20, 50 years ahead and figure out, okay, how do you promote the community's health? How do you protect the community's health? How do you prevent disasters? And it's really exciting.
Yeah. You said you hadn't run for elected office before. So what was the learning curve there? What was that like?
There is a need out there, I think, for people to help support people running for the first time. Because it's a lot, and especially
it's scary. Yeah.
And there's just a lot to keep track of. And of course, you don't want to run afoul of any, you know, very important rules and guidelines. And as a public employee, I also had a different set of rules because I work for Barnstable County. And so I ended up self-funding my campaign because and not that it cost that much money, you know, it was some signs, but it wasn't cheap. And I realized, you know, I had a position of privilege where I could do that. But you need a little, especially if you are a public employee, you need a little team of people with you.
Yeah, you can't campaign on company time.
And one major rule. And then also there's rules about how you can accept campaign donations. So you need a treasurer. And I just didn't quite know that going in. But man, if there's anybody out there who has, you know, good money management skills, there's a need for you to support other people running for town positions.
Right, Casey, you previously served on the Brewster Board of Health, which was an elected position, right?
In my case, someone resigned. The select board was looking for an appointee to fill the unexpired term.
So have you had to run?
I have not had to run, thank goodness.
So what is the role of the Conservation Commission?
The Conservation Commission in the town of Brewster is responsible for administering the Massachusetts Wetlands Protection Act and the Brewster Wetlands Protection Bylaw. So if there's really any activity within 100 feet of a wetland in the town of Brewster, so a lot of the town, it comes before us in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, there's a lot of dialogue and back and forth with applicants to be able to figure out what's a way in which they can do what they want to do with their project, with their property, but in a way that it's conditioned so we protect the interests of the wetland.
Which is why you got the dog-eared copy of all the...
Exactly. And I'm really fortunate to work at Horsley Witten Group. You know, this is the sort of work that we do, even when I'm not volunteering. So if I have a stormwater question, I've got 10 people I can call. I've got engineers that I can just pick a brain over lunch. I'm really fortunate because I don't think any single person knows every ins and out of the...
Yeah, it's nice to have a team like that, right?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate.
We're talking with individual scientists who are giving back to their communities by volunteering their time and expertise on local town boards. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626 if you have a comment or a question. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing the benefits of having world-class science research and environmental consulting firms in our region. We're talking with three scientists who put their degrees and knowledge to work after hours by volunteering on town boards. With us is Casey Chatelain, environmental scientist with the Horsley-Witten Group, currently serving on the Town of Brewster Conservation Commission, previously on the town's Board of Health, Calliope Schutz, environmental specialist in water quality and hazardous materials program at the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, serving on the Provincetown Board of Health, and Abigail Archer, Fisheries and Aquaculture Specialist at Hui Sea Grant Program and member of the Brewster Board of Health. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a comment or question for us this morning, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Calliope, as a member of a town board, you're dealing with the public, local businesses, town administration, your fellow board members. What are some of the challenges?
Some of the challenges in a town like Provincetown are coordinating, I think, all the different perspectives. There's a lot of different demographics that live in Provincetown with a lot of competing interests. And I think trying to balance that and really focus on the regulatory directive. And I think this is a good example, like telling someone that the room that they were born in is not a bedroom, someone who's a senior citizen who grew up in Provincetown, that, like things like that. It's really complicated. But for the whole, I would say the current administration in Provincetown is very supportive of the health director and the health department. We went through the pandemic in a way that was really mindful and smart and based on science and not as quite as maybe emotional as it could have been reading about other areas of the country. I would say on the whole, it's a very supportive environment.
Yeah. Abigail, what challenges have you experienced in your role at the Brewster Board of Health?
So water quality is the major issue of our time on Cape Cod, one could argue,
yeah. Yeah.
And everywhere. And so trying to figure out what is the best way, based on science, that is economically affordable for the town and individual residents to protect our drinking water, which is our groundwater, and to protect our coastal embayments. And so some towns are, you know, in the midst of figuring out how to sewer. Brewster is part of three different watersheds, actually more than that, but three that are specifically being looked at right now in terms of wastewater. And so there's a lot of very technical discussions about innovative alternative septic systems. And working with Barnstable County and the Septic System Test Center is just an amazing resource to have in the county. Mm. And just trying to step through and puzzle through what is the best set of technologies that we can use, you know, given our knowledge right now, to protect water quality. And I think one of the secrets to success of any town board is having people from a variety of backgrounds and specialties on the board. And so Brewster Board of Health, we sort of divide and conquer. Everybody is a liaison to a different committee. And so we're fortunate that we have two technical experts on the board who are retired septic system engineers.
Wow.
And so, you know, we lean on them a lot.
Hmm. Does knowing you face election change how you go about your work on the board?
No.
No, not at all. Okay.
Not at all.
Casey, in the eyes of the public, do you find your background as an environmental specialist gives you more credibility on the Conservation Commission, or can it sometimes be a disadvantage in the eyes of the public?
I don't think it's, you know, a credibility thing. I think sometimes I catch myself, it gets called alphabet soup sometimes with different acronyms and language. You know, I work all day using one set of language, and then to communicate science to the public, you got to like flip a switch and use different language. But really, I think that for the most part, our biggest challenge is really communicating to the public about, like, this regulation exists. A lot of people come in front of us not necessarily realizing that the trees they cut down because they just wanted a better view, that's against the rules. They're just not aware. So I think it's fortunate that I have a background, a perspective to help guide some of those discussions, but I don't think it's a credibility issue.
Okay, education's a big part for all of you, right? I mean, because people come and they don't understand the science that might be involved or the rules and why they're there, and then they get mad, right? And so you have to kind of educate them and calm them down at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, so in Brewster, the town is really well off because the departments communicate with each other really well. So if someone pulls a building permit or a septic permit that happens to be within 100 feet of a wetlands, they will notify the conservation department and make sure that that process moves forward. But there's been some cases where we see a property that, you know, someone's been cutting down trees, they put in a pathway, all of these things that they've maintained for 20, 30 years and not have known that they needed to get a permit for it the first time around.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that situation there, I think, is an example of where being a scientist does have some, it helps you prepare for the situation because people are like, why can't I do this? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, either as a scientist, you're already aware of the science, or you can then go search for those studies and say, look, you know, this is based on a set of research. Yeah. And certainly you don't have to be a scientist to volunteer for any boards and committees, but that having that background is helpful when you're trying to explain to people the reasoning why behind these regulations that we have.
All right. Dave is giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning, everyone. It sounds like we have a very smart and hardworking group of people here on this conversation. And I just wanted to, you know, thank you guys from all of us around because, you know, I work all day and I can't imagine working all day and then also doing this work and doing it in such a considerate and well-educated manner is very impressive. And, you know, I'm sure you run into some difficulties, but, you know, I think most of us, if not all of us that have grown up here and appreciate it, love this kind of work that you do. And, you know, we might bend the rules a little here and there, but we really do care about what you guys do, and just sounds like such a tough thing to do after a day of work, and then to go and do that is just so impressive.
Dave, thanks for calling, showing your appreciation. We appreciate that. Did you want to respond to Dave, or just you're raising your hand? We said bend the rules a little. Let me.
No, it is really nice to hear the appreciation. I think about all the years as a single mom when I was dragging my daughter to all these meetings, and it is nice to get recognized. I don't think that happens very often. So
thank you, Dave.
It's a lot of hard work. Yeah.
Earlier in the show, we talked about the politicization of science. Are you seeing that play out in the work you do on town boards? I mean, how are people perceiving your professional background? Anybody?
I don't see it for any of the boards that I've served on. I think one of the things that Casey and Abigail and I have in common is even though we're serving on a regulatory board, our approach is like education. And I think that people on Cape Cod really appreciate that when you are not coming at them necessarily with the stick, but really with the carrot, like how in helping them shape how they can understand what's happening. I mean, obviously, we have to be regulatory and sometimes, you know, take things a little bit of a different approach. But the education is really important for the public, and people come to the board for that.
Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on that? Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Calliope said. There, a good approach to trying to, you know, work with someone in a difficult conversation is to try and figure out what are your common values, what are your common goals? And we're really fortunate, like the caller just said, we're really fortunate on Cape Cod is that, you know, most people care deeply about nature on Cape Cod, and they care about their community and the health and the well-being of their community. And in my experience so far, I found if people are having a very hard time with the regulation, it's just because they don't know the background behind it. And I guess maybe I've been fortunate, and then that has been a solution for any of the conflicts, mm-hmm. you know, during meetings that I've been a part of. But yeah, just showing people why the town has this approach, and then being willing to discuss if they have a different set of observations.
Right. So what's your advice to people who might be considering sitting on a town board, you know, the best parts and the challenges? What advice would you give somebody? I'll start with you, Abigail. What do you tell people who are thinking, yeah, I've been thinking about this, but I don't know?
I definitely encourage people to do it. And if you haven't had the opportunity before, the exposure, a lot of town boards and committee meetings are recorded now. And so Town of Brewster has this amazing set on our website. So if you want to know what the Recreation Commission or the Select Board or Conservation Commission has been discussing, you can just go listen to the recording of that while you're washing your dishes or cleaning your floor, or, you know, doing something else. You can multitask. So if you're interested in a particular subject matter, I'd say just listen to a few recordings or go and attend some meetings. They're all open meetings. It brings me a tremendous sense of pride to serve my community in this way. I think that's something that's really important. And like Calliope said earlier, we are so fortunate to live in a democracy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people on the planet are
don't have that situation.
And
yeah.
So it's really, yes, it's challenging, but I think there's more opportunity and joy than there are challenges in serving your community in this way and participating in our participatory democracy.
Calliope?
I would say interview boards, interview members of boards, align with what you believe in. Sometimes I wonder why I don't serve on no offense to the Board of Health, but a more fun board. I think also looking at your conflict of interests. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't serve on a board if you have, or you have to recuse yourself if you have a conflict of interest and an ethics issue. And, you know, we see that with like zoning and different boards around. So that would be something to really be considerate of. And I think being humble, you know, like I've made a lot of mistakes and I've done them on air. Thanks for pointing that out, Abigail, that they're all recorded and available. And approaching it with some humility, because there's a lot to learn and there's a lot of great people who can help you scale your learning curve. But you have to kind of ask for that help. So I would say interview boards and interview members.
Casey? And I'll 100% agree with that. Talking with someone, you know, who's done it, to figure out not just the time, like how much time is spent in meetings, but how much time is spent outside of meetings preparing. And then I'll also tack on, you know, you just got to try it. It's not a lifetime commitment by signing up. When someone first asked me when I was living in Barnstable if I wanted to serve on the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and I was like, I don't know, I don't think I have the background, but they pushed me to do it, and that made me realize that I do have the capacity. I do have the capacity, and I do have the wherewithal to contribute to those committees. And if you don't like it, you don't have the time. You don't have to re-up.
Serve out your term and move on. But you brought up a good point, and that is the diversity of experience, right? That's what we're looking for. And I might know because radio people can't see you, but Abigail and Casey, you both are quite young, it would seem to me. Either that or you look younger than your ages. But I think that's inspiring, and too, trying to get younger people engaged, not only on, you know, town, the municipality boards, but boards in general, right? We need more young, we need voices from everywhere.
I'm just going to point out to the radio listeners, I was young when I started too.
Yeah, you are.
It's just been a long, long time.
All right. So Calliope Shute is environmental specialist in the Water Quality and Hazardous Materials Program at the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, serving on the Provincetown Board of Health. Casey Chatelain, environmental scientist with the Horsley-Witten Group, currently serving on the Town of Brewster Conservation Commission, previously on the Town's Board of Health, and Abigail Archer, Fisheries and Aquaculture Specialist at HUE Sea Grant Program and member of the Brewster Board of Health. Thank you all. Thanks for the volunteer work that you're doing. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. And
thanks
for sharing that
with
us today.
Us.
I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.